My next question was actually going to be about an average day in Jim's shoes. So what's that look like?
Average day in my shoes is probably putting out fires. Putting out fires. And
firefighting,
yeah. So if there's a... as my staff often say to me, that's why you're the boss. Because I have to make the decisions. And to be honest, when you're the boss, it's a natural thing to make a decision. Because the answer is, whatever's good for the company goes. So if a client is upset about something, listen to them. If they're reasonable, then we'll sort it out for them. Because it's what's good for the company. So and if you want to take it from a black and white scenario, and you wouldn't end up in those sort of situations with any customers at all. So it's about being flexible, it's about being honest, and it's about making sure that the staff are happy and doing a good job, and things are turning around. My shoes can go from 1 minute doing a quote, the next minute delivering an urgent job to the other side of Auckland. It's varied. Whatever I have to do to keep the customers happy and the staff happy, I do it. Yeah. So it's interesting, because the reason I'm in today is because I'm helping one of the staff, because I know he's got a tight schedule for tomorrow on the machine. So I'm running some of the jobs now, and he'll come in tomorrow and thinking, oh, this is great. I've got a less simplified day.
Mm.
Yeah.
By the way, just so we get this on recording, it is Sunday at 3 p.m. and I thought I was going to be asking Jim to come in just for this interview, but he's been here for hours before I came in, running the machines.
Mm.
So, I came from the voting booth. Did you vote, Jim?
Not yet. No. No, my wife hasn't told me who to vote for. So, and when you take politics, you know, it's when you're in business, you basically, I know it's tunnel vision, but you have to vote national. Because it's stability in the marketplace is what I'd be looking for in these elections. It's not about change. You know, some things have to change. But history tells me that if too much change, it's not good for the company, country. So therefore, it's not good for business. So steady as you go is my motto when it comes to politicians. I don't generally admire them, but if they're good for business, then it's good for the country.
Yeah,
and that's why I look at it.
Yeah. Oh, are you a gambler, Jim?
I took out a lotto ticket this weekend, thinking I was going to win $30 million, but it didn't happen.
No, well, you're taking a chance on us and on this process. Mm. So it's quite interesting to hear about.
Like, well, you see, you've got to understand that that I don't think like you think, or like your team thinks.
Go on, then.
So I think. A lot differently, because I wasn't brought up in the digital age. So my way of thinking, especially with my being dyslexic too, I'm not your usual old person, but at the same time, I wish I could think as fast as you guys think. So I'm looking forward to the results of what we can put together, because it's all about trust as well.
Yeah.
And now I'm trusting you with my future, in other words. And you're trusting me that I'm going to implement what you recommend. So I suppose it's a win-win situation. But trust is right at the top of my value system.
Yeah.
If I can't trust my staff, then I shouldn't be in business. If I can't trust my customers, I shouldn't be in business.
Tell us about that, because I know that's something that you actually do differently to a lot of other people, as I think a boss and a person who's running a company. You take extreme, I think, pride and care in developing a good company culture, like relationships between your staff. I know you really care about where they are, not only like about how happy they are at work, but where they are in life. And you know, one of the stories I tell people when I describe you is the guy there's a guy who you let go. I think because he has learned everything there is to learn or something. Do you remember that story that you told me?
The guy I made redundant because I had to cut corners, and he said to me, "Why me? I'm most valuable to you." And I says, it's you, because you're a survivor, and you, this company is probably holding you back. So I said, I've made you redundant because I'm giving you a head start out into the real world. And he couldn't understand it at the time, but he came back to me after a few years and he says, thank you for believing in my, which he couldn't see at the time. So
where did that come from? Yeah.
Well, where did that come from? I suppose it's getting to know people. Like, there's two types of people in my world. There's the givers and the takers. Now, the givers will always give. And givers are in a very fortunate position because they can recognize a taker. But a taker is too busy taking to recognize who the giver is. And I know it sounds simple, but it's so true. If you've got a giver in your company and they put 100% effort in, they get the rewards. It's what goes around comes around. But the takers are too busy taking, and when there's nothing to take, then they leave. So very easy to manage because you make sure there's nothing for them to take, and they go. Whereas the givers, you know, they my job is to create an environment which they can give their all and get satisfaction out of it, and they'll stay around. And wages, money doesn't come into it because they're so happy doing what they're doing and so contented and secure that they're happy to be here. Mm. And as long as I'm creating that environment where they're learning, then they'll give their all. Takers are a different breed altogether. And I once met a guy at a big envelope manufacturing company in New Zealand about 40 years ago. And I was in awe. He's an Austrian guy, and I was in awe of him because he said to me one time when I met him, he says, from the time someone starts in my company, I know how long they're going to be working for me because of their attitude. And I thought, I couldn't understand at the time. Now I do. Now I know it's whether they take or give. And I think honesty and trust is right up there in my world. So I trust people. Yes, I've had people steal from me. I've had people take me to mediation because they wanted money. But at the end of the day, they're the takers. You don't want them around anyway. And like I say, there's nothing to take. You just make sure there's nothing for them to take and they'll leave. Mm. Yeah. So it's an interesting philosophy, but it works. Yeah.
And I've also seen many young artists that knock on your door and that come in and you know, that you help out with printing and their craft. What motivates you to do that? What excites you about?
I know there's a situation out there, and it's been there for years, where they have to have 2 years' experience to get a job. But how are they going to get 2 years' experience if they can't get a job? So it's a catch-22. And these techs and universities are pumping out these graphic designers. Not so much now, but they were pumping out for quite a lot of them. They had nowhere to go. You'd be lucky if one person in a class got a job in the industry. So I'm very conscious of that. So I create positions, if I can, to employ them to gain the experience. And I say to them, come on board. After 6 months, you can turn around and look back and see that when you started, you knew nothing. But all that knowledge you gain in that 6 months will set you up. So I said, come on board, work with me, and then when you're ready, go out into the real world. The knowledge you've learned will be worth something to you.
Yeah.
And that's my philosophy with younger people in that situation. I normally don't take on people straight from school. I like them to get some sort of learning experience behind them. So 3 years as a graphic design graduate is probably the minimum. I did take on someone that had done a year's diploma. One thing that the universities do teach, and that is the theory of design, and the concept of doing a good presentation. And I'm impressed with that, people who do good presentations. So, that's basically, young people need a hand to get into the industry. Yes, I try and create that. In fact, I approached Manukau Institute of Technology many years ago and said to them, look, I've got a company. Why don't we set up a scheme where we can take these young people and give them experience, but they weren't interested. Now they're just starting to approach me, and that's after 10 years.
Yeah.
The MIT is starting to approach industry, and I just think to myself, where were they 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not sure if I've told you, we're doing some work in education. I'm talking there are change makers in the universities who I've talked to personally recently, and at the end of the day, like the initiatives are still driven by money. Universities are a business and they need to make money. And I think now more than ever, the pressure from the industry and the students, right, of students not being able to connect with industry well after their education, and the industry having not many, in terms of people who are prepared for the industry that they can take in.
Yeah.
There's a disparity there that the universities kind of didn't have to take care of much until now. Now it's like so clear.
I remember years ago I did a computer graphics course.
Yeah.
And they had a teacher there. And I suddenly twigged onto this guy who didn't know much about the industry, but he was teaching computer graphics. And I said to him, how does a PMS book work, Panto Matching System book work? And he said, you're going to have to ask your printer. And I says, I am the printer.
Yeah.
And I'm asking you as a tutor. And he couldn't answer.
Yeah.
And I think that was a long time ago. But it used to be that Catch-22 was out there. I don't know if it's still there. I think it is. Where young people just can't get into the industry because there's not enough people that will take a punt on them and educate them.
Do apprenticeships still exist?
Apprenticeships still exist, yeah. But it's not run like the apprenticeship in my day where you sign up to one company.
Yeah.
It's like the electrical and the building industry. They have these organizations set up now that place apprentices in different companies, and they take them out and put them into another company. The apprenticeships are still out there, but no, if it was my children, I wouldn't allow them to come into the printing industry. I would say go and get a job somewhere else.
Wait, why is that?
Sunset industry. back to the old sunset. I think it's changing, and I think the way industries are working now, I think you have to be passionate about your career to survive in an industry. And if you don't know anything about print, then you shouldn't be in it. And I just if you're a potter, for example, making pottery, go and get a job doing pottery because that's your passion. And I think if you're following your passion, then you will be successful in any job you do if it's following your passion. But if it's just to be in the printing industry, it's changing so fast. It's this is why I'm talking to you. I can't comprehend myself the amount of change that's coming up that will drive companies forward. I wouldn't want my two children to be in this industry because of change. Having said that, it's a challenge to change, and that's why I'm still here, I think. The challenge.
What's your passion, Joe?
My passion is helping people to grow. I know it sounds a little bit corny, but the printing is just a tool to help people to grow. And I think that I'm being fortunate that I've made some good commercial decisions, like buying the building. So having this building now, I would like to set up eventually a little sort of work area for a student to come in and get the experience they need to go out and get a job. It's teaching them what's required. Whereas I don't think the universities are at that stage yet. I mean, if you're a designer and you enter into pottery or clothes design and all that sort of thing, there's certain companies you go in, and the same with printing. You know, a lot of people go to the bigger companies. But, you know, once traditionally you would have a couple of graphic artists working for you. Now what happens is Xerox, for example, they employ digital printers or graphic artists to go around their customers, and they supply them with stuff. And so they will put in a machine into an organization, and they'll supply the staff to run that machine.
Yeah, and the staff is a Xerox staff.
Yeah. So it's probably, I mean, probably that's why they've lost $472 million in the New Zealand marketplace in the last 12 months, which is what's happened. You know, yeah. They've gone out there, try to manipulate the market to suit themselves, and it hasn't worked on them.
Yeah. So their thought process was, hey, we're under machines.
Their process is greed, and we're going to take over the marketplace. Well, they didn't realise that there wasn't that much marketplace for them to take over. So, you know, just greedy salespeople.
Yeah.
And you know, we saw it happening.
Yeah.
There was a company in East Tamaki, a company called Geon, was around 3 or 4 years ago. Geon went out there, an Australian company owned by Equity Group. They just went out there and bought their marketplace. They went out there and undercut everybody. You know, they're not there anymore. Went bust.
Just before we move on to talking about the last part, which is the future,
right?
What do you think are the biggest problems that currently exist in this industry?
I think the biggest issue is the changing of technology, changing of in any business there's change. I know that. But I think it's your size of your market compared with how fast you've got to change within that market to survive as a company. And I think that's the biggest challenge is that change. And, you know...
What technologies are you talking about? Are you talking about the printing itself or...?
I'm talking about other businesses as well. You know, I've got clients that traditionally I did a lot of work for, and now they get their products brought in from somewhere like China, already packaged, already got the brochures, instruction leaflets, whatever. And they get that done in China for free if they buy the product. So I think that the marketplace and how people are working. I mean, another customer imports luggage. We still do a lot of printing for them, still do a little bit for them, not much. All their suitcases they bring in has already got their pricing, got their nice swing tags, everything attached to them. And that guy told me that he gets it all done for free, the cost of a suitcase. So competition is always out there. Changing the way companies are, you know, changing their admin systems and things like that. So not so much NCR work, any NCR books, no carbon required books, you know, invoice books and things like that, order books, not so many of those anymore. It's all done over the internet. So yeah, the paper companies tell us there's a 20% decrease every year in paper being imported into New Zealand.
Yeah.
So you know, you've got the Greens pushing paperless societies, and obviously even the Ministry of Education saying they want paperless schools. What they don't realise is that forestry worldwide, it needs trees to grow. Once they mature, they take less carbon out of the atmosphere, but while they're grown, they take carbon out of the atmosphere. So it's important that those trees grow. In fact, they say that there's 70% more trees in Europe than what there was in the 1950s because of the paper industry renewing the trees and the way they grow and things like that. And the thing is, with New Zealand, the forestry, it's all about the fibre, the length of the fibre. So New Zealand trees are not good for paper. The only product that gets produced in New Zealand from the paper industry is, you know, when you get buy a bag of concrete or a bag of flour and you get the inner lining of the brown paper that's strong, that's the only paper that's produced in New Zealand.
Yeah.
It used to be, we used to have our own paper producing companies or areas. The Tower of Falls is one of them. It's a good product that now gets produced in Australia. But, you know, you've got to look at the size of our market, how much paper is required, and the size of those industries and what it needs to produce that paper wasn't viable to produce in New Zealand. So I think that, you know, when you talk about paper and the climate and all that sort of thing, there's a lot of misconception out there worldwide. And I tell you, it was in the... In the early 2000s, HP got themselves into trouble worldwide because they were saying that, you know, using paper was wrong for the climate and all that sort of thing. But all they were doing was trying to sell their new electronic systems and things like that. So, yeah, there's a lot of documentary documents on Google and things like that. If you ever read it about why the world needs paper.
Yeah,
not necessary for chopping down trees is bad for the economy. For the environment, it's actually good.
As we know, often I've felt that fear and excitement are two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
As you look at the future, I know that you have a lot of challenges, a lot of things to be pessimistic about, and also comes a lot of opportunities and a lot of things to be optimistic about. And when you hear that, does anything come to mind as some, like, what's in your projection of the future that you're most looking forward to?
Well, I always keep abreast of new ideas coming through.
Yeah.
There's a new product called Nanography. Nano has been the very small particles.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to launch that like you've got letterpress printing, offset printing. This is nanography printing. And nano is particles are so small they can get into your pores of your skin. So it's in its experimental stage. They've got the first machine that just launching into the world in Israel, actually. And that's been mainly targeted to the packaging industry. So that would be an interesting one to watch. They reckon they'll have machines. It's sort of like an inkjet small particle sort of process rather than the traditional presses. But they reckon they'll have A1 sheets in America. They will have machines, A1 presses, which is over the big 840 by 600, whatever the size is, the big sheets. They'll have them running at 15,000 sheets an hour, and every sheet will be different image on them. And that's just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
But they reckon they'll get there.
What? So wait. So,
you know, large format printers that use the heads?
The speed and... what is the breakthrough here in terms of, like, the output? It's a speed.
Well, offset printing at the moment, they run at 15,000 an hour.
Yeah.
And they'll do both sides of the sheets. On the big presses, they'll do both sides of the sheet at once.
Yeah.
So it's just working off plates. But if you're talking about nanography and what it's proposed to do, is that it's inkjet. So that it'll be, the sheets will be shooting under inkjet. They're putting small particles onto the sheet, but they'll do it in such a way that each sheet will be a different image. You know?
Yeah.
And to me, that's mind-boggling.
Damn.
My brain doesn't think that much, but you know, there's also things like textile printing, 3D printing. That you know, I've just read an article about a machine that they've developed for making plates in your house, in your home. It produces the plates, and then once you've had your meal, it recycles and reproduces another plate for the next meal.
Yeah.
So you don't actually have to have storage in your kitchen.
There's so many things wrong with that, but...
Yeah.
In contrast, what's remained the same in the industry and things that you don't think will not change about it? It'll just keep being crucial parts of...
A crucial part is graphic design. graphic design, yes, it's software is changing, but the actual having that skill, what I call creative brain compared to an analytical brain, is I don't think you'll change that. I think if you're a graphic designer, you think differently. And all credit to them. I admire them because they are creative people. And I think you get a person, I can recognise them. If they're creative, I can recognise them. Just the way they act and talk and think. Whereas I'd like to think that those people will still be around for years and years and years because we need them. We need the creative people. As far as the production of paper hasn't changed for years. Probably got a little bit whiter. But paper is still a very important part. I can't see that changing. Although Xerox has decided to indent paper themselves and trying to compete with the paper industry out there, which,
yeah,
you know, it's sort of damaged the paper industry a little bit because now they're saying they're having to put their prices. This is Xerox having to put their prices up. Well, we all know why, because they're selling it as a loss leader. And, you know, that's been happening for the last 5 years. That's why they lose so much money. They set up a company with their own machine, with their own operator, with their own paper, and try and sell that as a concept. But that's costing that company a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's because it's easy for people to not have to think about it and not have to do it themselves that it's sort of took a bit of a hole. But then there's a whole lot of misaccountancy procedures and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, Xerox are not the popular people out there at the moment. But then, you know, the industry allowed them to get away with it. I mean, I had a client that I was doing $25,000 a month digital printing for, and I'd organised a special stock that they wanted to use, a craft paper, to be imported from Australia, and they had to bring 6 ton of this paper in minimum, and they sheeted it down for me and all that sort of thing. And this customer was happy. I was doing all the printing, and then Xerox went along and says, "Well, why don't you put in your own machine and we'll get the paper for you?" So they went to that paper company and bought the paper that I was bringing in from Australia through this company. And I said to this paper company, "This isn't right. You've taken the product that I was selling to my client, and now you're selling to Xerox, and they're selling it probably at a loss to that client,
yeah,
just to get the machine in there." And before you knew it, I'd lost that $25,000 worth of digital printing a month. And I said to that paper company, "You mark my words, Xerox won't be buying off you in a year's time. They'll be bringing it in themselves," which is exactly what happened. So the paper company missed out, I missed out, and Xerox was losing money. Go figure, how's that work? You know? But it's called greed, because that salesperson was getting his commission no matter what he sold, he was getting his commission. So interesting concept, but the paper industry is an important part of our industry. And what happens is it's owned, most of them, I think there's one New Zealand paper company, which is British and Foreign, that's the name of it, BNF Paper. They're New Zealand owned, but the rest of them are Australian owned. And what happens in Australia discount in their own country, but they try and pull the profit out of New Zealand to prop up their industry. Their low profits over there. So yeah, we have to keep them pretty honest, but they try it on, they up the prices occasionally. But good quality paper is important.
Last few questions. If you could go back to when you were 25 years old and give your past self one piece of advice for what's coming up, does anything come to mind?
Definitely cash flow. If I was starting this business up again and I had the knowledge that I knew about the accounting systems and how it's important to have positive cash flow, that's the one thing I would have maintained back then, rather than going out buying a new car every 3 years or whatever. because I was, had a business partner and we wanted to have a good image and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, your cash is king. Mm-hmm. If you've got good cash flow in any business, then then your business will survive because you can pay your bills. A lot of companies out there go along and they get themselves financially in trouble. They can't pay the bills. Their overheads are too high or whatever. But it's sad, really. People don't realize the importance of cash flow. So, if you're talking about the industry...
I feel like you're talking about me.
The industry itself, I think, you get your staff. Your staff are your biggest asset. Mm. And then you've got your overheads. And if you can control your overheads, then you're okay. But, it's not easy. Like I say, we lost that $25,000 a month digital work. Mm. Someone had to go, and unfortunately, it was a wife. She had to go and get a job.
Yeah.
So it's just managing it. And I think this, a year ago, I was struggling a little bit with my cash flow, and I made some changes, and now it's fine. Mm. It's fine. And it's just a matter of managing it. So I think 25 years ago, if I had the same skills and knowledge to manage it and foresee what was happening, in the business, then I would be a lot better off today. And that's why I work.
Yeah. If you forgetting about cash flow and printing for a second, in that case, say in 15 years from now, let's say 10 years from now, even longer, what do you want your day to look like? Where do you want to work? What kind of people do you want to be working with? What's the culture in that workplace? What do you want that to
That's a difficult like? One because I'm 62. So at 72, I would have been expected to be well retired by then.
Well, what does retired mean?
Well, retired means going and cruising the world, enjoying the world.
Yeah.
I think I could see myself living in Tuscany in Italy or Germany somewhere.
Yeah.
And just traveling around in a camper van is what I would see. But if you're talking about the business, the business I would see is completely different to what it is now. Still have the shell. I would like to see it more of a consultancy business in the sense of having, say, graphic designers, a team of graphic designers who are self-employed, bringing work in, using the equipment and structure it so that it was more for their benefit, but it was paying the rent and the building, if you get what I mean. I see the industry changing in that direction. It's who you know out there in the marketplace against, if you had a graphic designer that had a friend who had worked in a big corporate and then that corporate gave that graphic designer the work, that graphic designer would have a facility to produce the work themselves. So it's sort of like being a bit of a brokerage, sort of an industry rather than a productive industry. It still wouldn't work, and that wouldn't work in larger companies like corporate companies and things like that, as far as the print industries like packaging or something like that. But in smaller companies, I can see an advantage of having that sort of structure set up. And then I could just get the rent for the building and just pay for my lunch over in Italy.
But come on, I know you, Jim. You can't do that for too long.
No.
You need. I know that you thrive off challenge, and as you said, helping people in a meaningful way motivates you.
Do you know what I want to do?
What do you want to do?
I want to start up a tour company, and I want to be like the Pied Piper. I want to be the driver, and I want to be the courier. I want to be the guy that's showing these people around. Only small, not a big bus. So just maybe a 12-seater, but I want to have it structured so that I did Northland. Someone in Rotorua did that area. So you just drive the bus down there and hand it over to another driver and then drive back to Auckland. So it in your own car. So it's sort of like and have someone in the South Island. So it's like giving the tourists the Kiwi experience but doing it in a practical way. Not one bus with one driver, the whole country,
Yeah.
Sort of staging, giving them different personalities. Well, I've got those personalities lined up. You know, it's been a it's been a passion for mine for a while. Whether I get there or not, I don't know.
But you get there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's interesting.
I got two questions for you. Last ones. One's like it's like I forgot to ask at the beginning, and it's kind of doing due diligence with this, but and one fun one, and that is, what's different about Advanced Print, your company, from other print companies? What do you do differently?
I think we're structured in a way that it's cost effective to deal with us. I think that, you know, we have got a marketplace. You know, the Joe Bloggs is looking for 50 yeah. invitations for a birthday party. It's not really economical to come here.
Yeah.
They're best to go to the warehouse stationery. That's you know, the counter sort of stuff. So we've got business to business. It's people like Dean with us because we're more personal.
Mm.
And we're not seen as just a print company. We're individuals within the company. I do promote that to my staff. Mm. I allow my staff to deal directly with the clients.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by a lot of my days is putting out the fires, because something hasn't happened, but I make sure that it does happen.
Mm.
So it's sure, a lot of the customers, and the girls say that a lot of the customers don't want to talk to them. They only want to talk to me, and vice versa. Mm. I've got clients now that don't even know who I am,
mm.
but they know who the staff are. So mm. I think it's that mix and balance. People are comfortable dealing with us, and they know that we will do the job
mm.
correctly. Yeah.
In terms of the job, just to clarify for those who will listen to this, in terms of the range of things that you can do in the print industry, packaging, offset, digital, large format.
Signage, signs.
Yes. Is there anything you don't do?
Yeah, anything on plastics or vinyls or synthetics. Yeah. We're not a large format printer. We don't do large formats. We do organize large formats work.
Yeah.
But we don't do large format signage printing, things like that.
Yeah.
I've just took on a housing company at the Auckland Home Show, and we delivered 32,000 brochures to them. And part of that was some foam board backed signage. There were six banners, I think it was 950 by about 1500, and then a big banner which was 1900 by 1500, so on foam board. So it was really basically getting outside of our normal work, but because it was all linked together, it was an exhibition stand, we did it for them.
Yeah.
So there's always friends out there with different companies that can help us achieve what we set out to achieve. At the end of the day, We're not specialised in printing on vinyls and synthetic yeah. stocks. It's just mainly paper yeah. and cardboard.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Jim, we've talked about everything. We talked about where you come from. We talked about the history of Advanced Print. We talked about the future a little bit. We talked about people and the industry. Last 30 seconds, what are your hopes and dreams for Advanced Print going forward?
I think that going forward, if I can leave it in someone's hands when I retire, and I'm probably talking 5 or 6 years from now, if it's structured in a way that they can take over and it survives, I think that that would be my legacy, that I started the company and it's still going long after I was involved in it. And I think that that's important. What it will be doing back down then, you know, I'm excited about textile printing, I'm excited about 3D printing, I'm excited about nanography.
Mm.
So I think it might be doing something different to what it is, but at least it's got the bones, it's got the building mm. here, it's got the support to actually allow it to change.
Mm.
And I think it has to change. I think that digital printing is limited to what it can do. And I think that the company itself is well positioned to change.
You're talking about legacy here.
Mm.
What do you want that to stand for?
Oh, like anything, you look for companies that are established out there that have been trading since the 1900s, you know. Well, this legacy would be that the company is still a printing company and is still trading.
No, I mean, like, what values do you want it to stand for?
Oh, the vanity.
Is it greed? Thievery?
I'd have to go and work for Xerox for that. No, it's just being true to the staff and true to the customers. You know, it's about what you've got in the world. It's your staff and your customers. It's a business, and I think it's important that when I say staff, your team. Really, it's not. I have a complete level standard of management. They tell me what to do a lot of the time. I don't pull rank on them or anything like that.
It's non-hierarchical.
No, none at all. You know, it's basically a company where you'd want to work yourself if I gave you the opportunity.
All right. Hey, thanks, Tim. I think you need to put out some more fires. There are people knocking on the door. Thanks so much for your time. I hope you enjoyed the process so far. I'm excited about what's going to come out of this. So, yeah, let's do this.
Yep.
Thanks, Jim.
Yep. No worries.